This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hour number two of Sharp Money, live from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. I'm Ben Wilson in for Patrick. Rest of the week, Dustin Sweetelson is here already lamenting a couple of bets. Taj Bradley, a lot of pitches through two innings, Dustin, but you're clean so far. Just got to get him on the horse. You should have laid it with the U.S. Women's National Team. This Zambia outfit is not exactly the most buttoned-up team I've ever seen defending the final third of the pitch in my life. I'll put it that way.
It's a big moment for Zambia.
Big moment for Zambia.
People just found out they existed.
Well, you found out they existed. No, we knew they existed.
I think I represent the average American.
I will admit, I'm probably in the minority of people who have been through a very sketchy-looking customs center in Zambia.
Whoa, now you're going to talk trash about the country.
No, I'm just saying, I didn't know editorializing. It was just the reality of the situation.
I was just saying I didn't know we were on the same planet. You're actually going to say bad things about them. That's very different.
Okay. Well, I had a lovely time. I'll try to save myself on that. 3-0 U.S. Women's National Team at the break there, and Zambia is already down to 10 women for the rest of that match. U.S. was laying 3 goals, total of 4. We will talk some more baseball, some more Olympics in a little bit. We also have a great hour here set up as we'll get into our three-point stance in about 15 minutes. Right now, though, our pal from RacingDudes.com, Aaron Halterman, in what is a busy time in the racing season for sure. I'm trying to get out to Del Mar, Dustin. Schedule has not allowed me to yet as we go out to our progressive guest line. Good to see Aaron Halterman back with us. And we're also in the build-up here. We got, a week till the Hall of Fame game, about 3 weeks out now from week zero college football. So very busy time for you guys in your general prep, I assume.
Yeah, for sure. And just coming on the network here, whether it be this show or The Handle, it seems like we're just talking college football every time I come on. And then we're also sprinkling in NFL now. And yeah, it's crazy. Like, most of the camps open next week for college, I should say. And then NFL, we're already got that going on, except for Lamar, who didn't really practice yesterday. But that's all right. But anyway, yeah, we're back. We're ready. Could not be more excited for football.
So you're going through the process now, finding teams you want to back in futures. And I think there are people out there maybe haven't dabbled into this before. I tend to be someone, Aaron, who goes for these longer shots and hope they shorten up and then I can get creative in the market. When you go about looking how you want to attack your futures, what is it you're looking for in teams to back that, you know, provide value for you?
It depends on the sport, honestly. When I look at baseball and when I look at hockey, give me the longer prices. I'm not talking like the 80-1 shots that really don't have a chance. Give me those middle markets. Give me a 10-1, 15-1, 20-1 teams kind of in that area that I can attack. So again, with baseball and hockey, I feel like the variance is just crazy and you need to kind of get to that middle ground. You look at the Florida Panthers who just won the Stanley Cup. You could get them at 10, 12, 15-1 at different times in the season, and that's kind of what you're looking for. Football, I'm a little chalky. I feel like there's not as much variance in football. I feel like you can support some of the shorter prices and be okay, especially if you think one of those shorter price teams are going to have a really nice start to the season and that price is going to go down. So I do tend to be what I do with football, do a little bit chalky and then take one of my kind of longer shots that I like. But I think in football, the variance is a little bit less when it comes to the top teams versus kind of the middle tier versus the bottom tier. Where in baseball and in the NHL, I feel like that's a little bit more, that gap's a little bit closer. So that's kind of my overall strategy when I start to look at these markets.
As long as we're talking top of the board in NFL, big question mark really the last 3 years is how do you deal with a Kansas City team that has so few holes to poke in its roster in general? Price at the top of the market here, about 6-1 to win the Super Bowl, one of the highest win total teams as well as they look to the three-peat this season. How do you approach it on the Kansas City front for a team that will have some questions at wide receiver, but for the most part, as rock solid as it gets for one of the elites of the NFL?
Yeah, you just take them. That's all there is to it to me. Anytime Patrick Mahomes is the quarterback there, you just take them. Look at this team last year, guys. They really weren't that good. And I know that's going to be like, that's a crazy thing to say. They won the Super Bowl, but they really weren't that good. They won it with defense. They won it with a running game. They won it with wide receivers who couldn't catch the ball, and they were still able to get it done. They went on the road and won last year a couple times in the playoffs at Buffalo and in Baltimore. And it's just like, now, yeah, they're still, their question marks at wide receiver are there, but they're not near as big as they were last year. Hollywood Brown will stabilize things. I really like Xavier Worthy, the draft pick out of of Texas that they got. I think he's going to be excellent for them. I think he'll fit that scheme really well. Look, at 6-1, I'm taking them. I don't care. I think they're way likely the team to beat, or the team to win the whole thing and the team to beat. So listen, give me Kansas City. Give me the chalk as far as the NFL goes for my top pick.
So a couple notes. Some people get scared of someone that short on the board. What I'd say about this, I love the point Aaron made. You added two receivers that are, you can make the case, the two fastest receivers in the league, paired with the quarterback who can probably throw it the furthest in the league. We don't have to like rethink things here. All of a sudden, this offense is going to be totally different. And also, you bet 5-1, they're going to be favored late. If you need to hedge, you're providing middle opportunities, betting on dogs, betting against your ticket. All right, well, that's your shorter bet, Aaron, right? Let's get yep. the longer bet when it comes to Super Bowl futures. What are you looking at?
I may be crazy, guys. I really like the Los Angeles Rams this year, and I really like the price. Right now, they're sitting at 30-1. They've got to be healthier, that's for sure. Offensively, so many injuries the last couple of seasons. Matt Stafford, I think if he's healthy, he'll have a big year. You got Nacua. I mean, you developed him last year out of necessity. You know, Cups, you know, hopefully at least he's going to come back and be 100%. So I think offensively, they're going to be really good. They did well in the draft at running back offensively as well. And the defensively, I think everybody's going to say, well, Aaron Donald's gone. Uh-oh. Yeah, this team's still pretty good defensively. They've still got a lot of pieces. They've made some nice moves. I think at 30-1, this team makes a ton of sense. You know, right now you can get them even money just to make the playoffs. I think that'd be a good bet as well. Look, I know they got to deal with San Francisco. That could be a problem. There's no doubt about it. That team's still very good. But look out for this Rams team. They were pretty darn good at the end of last season, guys. And if they can kind of just carry in that momentum, I think they're going to be a tough out.
At least for me, Dustin, Rams, one of five teams I have positionally in the top 15 across all offensive positions in the NFL. And the other teams, you're looking at teams like the Eagles, the Lions, Packers, and Jets. So you're talking teams that are much, much shorter as far as futures perspective. Defense, obviously the big issue Zarin's talking about. You get Chris Shula in, new DC, and I wonder as a result of that, is it a correlative bet looking to fade San Francisco on the other side, who got absolutely shafted by schedule makers, and we're already seeing the issues off the field where Trent Williams on offensive line is a holdout, a hold in for Brandon Ayuk at wide receiver. Are you in sell mode as a result of your Los Angeles Rams love as you're looking at the Niners?
Yep, I think that's a good way to put it. I think you laid it out just right. And I think the biggest thing is, guys, besides the Chiefs, who seem to just be able to win every year, it's hard to get there and win every single year. You're going to have a year or two where things don't break your way. You have injuries here or there, and then you kind of fall back a little bit. And you can kind of read that starting to happen again, like what you were laying out, a really tough schedule. That's what happens when you win the division, though. You get that tough schedule. And then couple that with a Rams team that wasn't that far behind you last year. It just kind of goes hand in hand. So I'm not overly hyped to play the 49ers at a little bit of a shorter price. I'll wait and see. You know, we'll see what happens. Maybe we're 10, 11 weeks in and it's like, okay, let's jump into the 49ers. But for me, I'm kind of staying away as far as the preseason goes.
All right, let's shift over to college football. Same strategy, one on the shorter side of things when it comes to the national championship, one on the longer side. Who are the two teams you're targeting when it comes to college football national championship?
Yeah, for me, Georgia, and I know that is a very short number to take on Georgia, but I have a firm belief that Georgia is the best team in the country. I really believe they were the best team in the country last year. But listen, they've got an Alabama kind of a hangup. We've seen Alabama beat them in the past when really we didn't think they should. And so they got beat, and you know, last year only four teams could make the playoffs. So, hey, guess what? You're out, Georgia. It was a kind of a bad deal. But you look at what they did after in the bowl game, just dominated an outman team. So give me Georgia. They've got a lot of guys back. Carson Beck, he's 8-1 to win the Heisman. I wouldn't hate that wager either because I think he's very good. So give me Georgia. And then guys, what about Alabama? I mean, why should they be 15-1 right now is my big thing. You kind of look at what they've got back. It's a lot. You got Jalen Milroe back. You got an offensive minded coach now in DeBoer. I think he'll get everything out of Milroe humanly possible. And I think the 12-team playoff being this year really helps Alabama. They may stumble out of the gates. It's a tough schedule early, new coaching staff, a lot of things. But if they can just get it going late, win some games late, get in the playoff, they're going to be dangerous. And I think at this price, you got to take Alabama seriously. So I stuck with the SEC. I went two teams out of there. I just thought the price is too good. I got to play Alabama.
Aaron Halterman from RacingDudes.com with us here on Sharp Money. It's like, I wonder if betting on SEC teams in college football, Dustin, as someone from the South, historically, you know. Not a bad strategy. I'm just saying.
Yeah. No, it's just the wrinkle of the 12-teamer. However, I think Alabama, they lost a lot of players, but I think people are underestimating how good of a coach Kalen DeBoer is.
Aren't we seeing, too? I mean, we've seen in some of already like the 2025 recruiting rankings there, and Kalen DeBoer coming in, the big worry was, okay, how do you recruit when you try to follow in the footsteps of a guy like a Nick Saban? Early reports, some of the guys Alabama signing already going into next year's class. It is really, really impressive, and it looks like, from the early indications, they will be a top five recruiting class, which, if you're already taking care of that, and you have a younger coach in Kalen DeBoer who's very offensive-minded, tremendous success in his previous stops already, you have to think it's a pretty good setup, right, to replace a guy as big as Saban.
I think at first I was a little panicked, and then when you really looked into it, yes. And look, I'm going to say this. For Alabama standards, which is way above anything else, Nick Saban's recruiting had dropped just a smidge because, you know what? He's a little outdated for the current setup. That's why he's gone, guys, because I don't think he wanted to deal with the current NIL situation. So I think they actually will recruit a little bit better and kind of get back to being that dominant team in the SEC under DeBoer. If they just give him some time, he might struggle early. I know it's a big adjustment, but they give him a little time. Let's not forget Washington played for the national championship last year, guys, and was right there with a chance to win.
No doubt. I just checked in 247. Alabama already the most five-star recruits of anybody for the 2025 class. And that's a good macro indication of where things are at. Doesn't look like a drop-off. Maybe an upgrade on the recruiting front there with Kalen DeBoer. Always good to check in with Aaron Harleton. We'll have him on again as we continue our run-up to the start of the football season. Great to catch up with you as always, sir.
All right, thanks, guys.
You're the best.
When we come back, time for a little three-point stance. It is camp time. Time to get into that three-point stance, Dustin. A couple of guys up for extension. Some injury concern. We'll discuss it all when we come back here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The VSiN NFL betting guide is out now, and our all-new college football guide drops a week from today, August the 1st, and only VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and NFL seasons. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats, trends, and power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up before the end of July, receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, and exclusive data like our betting splits all the way through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of just $175. That discount price expires July 31st, so do not wait. Visit vsin.com/subscribe to sign up today. We will have a full college football betting guide release show as well that also drops on Thursday. Excited for that, Dustin. I'll be with Adam Burke, who's putting together our guide. So let's
dangerous
go.
Duo.
Dangerous duo. We used to host a show called The Run Line together back in the day, which I posit the greatest show ever to be in the history of canceled VSiN shows. The Run.
Oh, well, there's a long list there.
I know. That's why it's a big statement.
But if it's you can't false advertise. If it's called The Run Line, you can only bet run lines.
We would do a lot of that. It would be a lot of. It was basically like Immaculate Grid before Immaculate Grid was a thing.
All right, I'm bitter. Because I went to
you're the best Immaculate
well,
Grid
no,
player at the network.
I went to do Immaculate Grid. I really liked it today. I love when it's played a minimum one game at a position for a team. Apparently, I live in a world where I think Timothy LeCastro played second or third base for the Diamondbacks at some point, and he never did. Strictly an outfielder, and it botched the whole thing.
Dang. That's...
I'm going to text you a couple I had on vacation. I almost texted you during my vacation. Yeah. I think I had one that was like a 7. Yeah. I had a 7 on vacation, maybe a 6 or a 4. I'll look.
I had a couple good... While you were on vacation, a couple highlights that come to mind. Corky Miller was... And that's also a...
That's a good one.
That was a brave one. That was a 1-plus game at catcher. 0.01% on Corky Miller. Dan Kolb was a good one.
I had a 3. That's what it was.
Wow. Okay. You're better than me on that. Dan Kolb, I thought, was a good one. Anyway, we're neither here nor there on that. Alas, it is time for... We could get into this every single show. We could do it for like an hour. It's awesome.
When I'm bored, like I have nothing going on, I will watch Property Brothers on HGTV, and I'll play Immaculate Grid on my phone. Now, I'm not bored very... I don't have the opportunity to be bored very often, especially since College Football 25 came out on PS5 a few weeks ago. But if I do have some downtime, those are my two things where I don't want to think about the world. Immaculate Grid combined with the Property Brothers.
I'll give you a good one. Matt Erickson player to only the one. The, my favorite categories recently are the ones where it's player to have only played with one team in his career.
Oh,
those really
are
hard.
Because usually it's the marquee names that stay forever. Like George Brett is one you think of. Let's see the one
Matt
that
Erickson,
helped me
in
the, right out of three. Alvaro Espinoza played one game for the Guardians at 0.05%.
Nice. That's good.
Actually, Shane Halter, 0.01% for the Royals.
We're really going deep. I wasn't too impressed with myself on this, but I Guillermo Moto was very low on the Brewer-Met combo. That was pretty good.
It's funny about Guillermo Moto is he tried to fight Mike Piazza. Mike Piazza tried to be tough with him, and for being fair, Guillermo Moto would have worked Mike Piazza.
Oh, Guillermo Moto is a big guy, yeah. Did not fool around whatsoever. Alas, it is time for the three-point stance. Here we go, Dustin. We're in a camp. True three-point stance. There's some reports coming out. They've been circling over the last few days as far as potential extension for Jordan Love and getting his deal done there for Green Bay. Adam Schefter had a report the other day. Now, the Athletic's Diana Russini reporting the Packers are getting closer. Right now, a hold-in technically for Jordan Love. There's not much worry, though, within the building and for Packer fans that this deal will eventually be consummated here for Love. It's just a matter of when and how much. And really, for the Packers, who traditionally don't hand out year-one guarantees, they do more of a rolling guarantees like they did with Aaron Rodgers down the back end of his career. That's really the thing they're trying to work through right now. But, I mean, there's no reason to think this won't get done and that Love is not deserving with what he's shown us so far. That's at least the big storyline to watch in Packer camp, a team that get in a lot of eyeballs and a lot of hype here in the NFC North.
Look, I was literally the last person on this Jordan Love hype last year. I was the last one to admit what was happening was real and legitimate, and he was going to be able to keep it going. But I have some questions for you as a Packers fan, right? Because I think it's a little bit different when you put that out there mid-year. They made a lot of great adjustments in the Green Bay offense where they figured things out. He and his young receivers came together, and you saw the chemistry developing. And I was thoroughly impressed, especially because I was not buying the hype. However, this has been a big theme for me over the last week, and it's the Packers and their offense, and it's the Texans and their offense. We live in a world in the NFL where there's all these coordinators, Ben, and all they do is find ways to take away what you do best. So you put something on film where you're successful. These coordinators are mad scientists. They spend their entire offseason months just working away at taking away your best moves. And I have some issues with thinking Green Bay and Houston are just going to come out and be the same offenses right away. I think they're going to get hit in the mouth. And I'm curious, you as a Packers fan, do you believe what you saw last year is repeatable when we live in the world that I just laid out for you with these DCs?
It is, because the personnel is so rock solid across the board on the offensive side. You are now removed from all the question marks at O-line, which was basically David Bakhtiari's status, holding hostage any sort of cohesion and continuity. As tough as it was to move on from him, you had to do it because of all the injuries and the lack of availability. Now that they know what they are getting, this is a top 10 offensive line. Everybody talks about Detroit in that division because it is the number one line far and away, not only in the NFC North, but in football. But Green Bay's is not much worse. It is certainly a very, very good line that protected Jordan Love to a very elite degree last year. Still have good weapons at the running back and wide receiver positions who they've been able to invest in. With the exception of Josh Jacobs paying guys money, it's been a lot of lower price guys able to come in, move on from Aaron Jones. Yet I'm not worried about the amount of weapons and their multidimensional value really within an offense that is predicated on a lot of pre-snap motion, a lot of deception. And it goes into trust with Matt LaFleur as a guy who, even before being a head coach, tremendous play caller. And you have a lot of data that supports he's been a guy to stay ahead of the curve throughout his career. So not many concerns for me. I would say it's all the question marks for Green Bay are all defense this year. You bring in Jeff Hafley to a unit that is perennially underperformed going back a decade and a half. Hafley, to me, is the bigger key, not so much Love and this Packer offense.
I think the biggest issue for the Packers defense over the last few years, it wasn't talent. There's a lot of talent.
No.
They've invested a lot of picks, and they've done well. For whatever reason, the results haven't matched the ability of the guys. It's really a weird defense.
Joe Barry, coach scared. And I mean, this is a long history. Joe Barry, not the first defensive coordinator for Green Bay to take a very soft stand back and play not to lose approach. That is where a lot of the early returns on Jeff Hafley super positive, and where, to me, the season hinges for Green Bay. We're talking quarterback, so we'll do it. Training camp.
They let Darnell Savage go. They replaced him with Xavier McKinney. I like Xavier McKinney. I thought it was really solid for the Giants. I just didn't think they had the cap space to lock him up and keep him there. But Darnell Savage ends up leaving. Where were you on Darnell Savage? Because I feel like he's a guy who was good early on.
Yeah, no, really valuable player. And, you know, it's a secondary that has been very, very deep. It's just been because of, to me, the coverage scheme has been exposed a little bit more. But what they did this year now, I still look at it as a group that's definitely a top half of the league secondary. And it's now, too, I think the aggressiveness we're hearing, and again, you're going to hear aggressiveness from a lot of these new coordinators who come in, look for a new approach, but that's what it's really predicated on. I'm not concerned at all about secondary. It's more the front seven, which has been retooled a little bit. That's probably the weakest of all the position groups for Green Bay, if we're looking offense, defense, and not including special teams, which is definitely a work in progress. Front seven, you think about the injuries and the attrition that they've had, guys unable to stay healthy, and the pass rush has been very, very hit or miss, especially in a division like the North where you're dealing with the Jared Goffs of the world with high-flying offenses. You have an explosive new look in Chicago with all sorts of weapons to try to neuter and Caleb Williams, what he'll do as a rookie. That's where my biggest concern is. It's not the secondary at all. As much as I was a huge Darnell Savage guy, it's more the front seven for Green Bay coming in.
Okay, second story in three-point stance. We'll do it quickly. Raheem Morris says Kirk Cousins in Atlanta has been medically cleared to return to the field. That's obviously massive news. The next story I want to touch on, because it's really not officially football season until Mike Tomlin's annoyed with the media.
Yeah.
Here is Mike Tomlin, who woke up today and found out that Russell Wilson is dealing with a calf issue and Justin Fields is taking first team reps. And oh, by the way, the videos I'm seeing online, he looks pretty good. And this was Tomlin yesterday talking about having to manage his quarterback situation with the reps.
Russ still have a pole position to be the starter?
Nothing has changed.
How do you plan on working those reps with him and Justin when it comes?
Very carefully. Well, yeah, I think I'm actually back myself into a corner, so you guys are going to ask me daily about the rep allocations. And no way. I've been on the job too long for that.
I love him. He's the best. He's the best. And I just feel bad what's about to happen to him and have his first losing season. I just feel bad about it.
You just love when the guy's been there so long, the reporters, like, they begin to open their mouths and he's like, I know the answer.
And they know. They know what they're doing to him. They know he's going to be annoyed. He knows he has to be annoyed back. But I love when people are so annoyed, all they can do is smile.
I mean, he handled it well for guys who traditionally have to answer questions like that. I would just, the worst job in media, at least that would be the most demoralizing, is having to answer or ask the coaches questions that you already basically know, but you have to answer, ask it because it's your job. And the answer is just going to basically be them barking at you in three-word statements, pretty much.
Yeah, look, hey.
Steelers camp underway.
Plus it's 450, official. Justin Fields takes the first snap for the Steelers this year. Russell Wilson, you got to lay 750.
Who's his, calf massage therapist? I mean, that's probably the bigger question right now for Russell Wilson. Alas, when we come back, John Mettler joins us from Covers. Talk a little Olympic betting. Lots of good angles John has, both in single game and futures markets. We'll break it down all right after this.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Back from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada, and the D. I'm Ben. He's Dustin. I will say what helped me get through your absence, Dustin, whenever I'd be on this show, was our little animation intro, because I would see you doing your little jacket thing.
Adjusting the jacket?
Yeah. It was nice. I felt like I was still connected to
it. It's unfortunate. I had a lot of moves that day when we did the photo shoot. It's all WWE, right? I don't even watch wrestling as an adult anymore. But, like, all my moves when the camera's on, is like, do something interesting. Do the Heartbreak Kid where you stretch out. Do some Hulk Hogan. And somehow they leave in just me, like, popping my collar there.
There had to be some reason.
I'm more flexible than you think. That's all I want America to know.
Just seeing you in the jacket with the sweater, it's already hot enough in Vegas, but that just, it's a tough visual just because I'm like, man, I can't imagine you had to have been comfortable.
It was definitely not the summer when that went down.
It was 100% not the summer when that happened. At least, hey, you're off to a good start here. Taj Bradley, 4 2/3 down, 68 pitches. So Rays 3, Blue Jays nothing. Dustin a little out prop over there on Taj Bradley. Looking good there. U.S. Women's National Team up 3-0 on Zambia now in the 73rd minute. That's a sweat for bettors who, if you wanted to get the over there, as things have really stopped in the second half. We'll update you on that in a little bit, talk some more of the daily action. But for right now, as long as we're talking Olympics here, let's go out to John Mettler on our progressive guest line, who was just here in Vegas. bearing the heat for NBA Summer League, and it leads right into the Olympic basketball stretch, which starts Saturday morning, bright and early for us here on the West Coast. John, good to see you. Glad you survived your stretch here at NBA Summer League. And a lot of markets now, we're finally seeing them. For a long time, it was just futures in the Olympics, especially on the men's side. Now we're getting some of the derivatives, and there's a lot of really interesting angles here to parse through.
Yeah, I've spent the last like probably 3-4 days here just going through like all the markets. They've put up a lot more, I think more than I've ever seen for like Olympic games here, just from like player props, futures. The futures board is quite insane, honestly. I really didn't anticipate to see that much available. I did go to the Canada-USA game when I was in Vegas too. That's actually why I did come to Vegas. Then I went to Summer League on the Friday.
Beautiful. And it's what's fascinating too is we've seen probably a different perception around the USA team, even just with exhibitions, than we were probably expecting to coming in, which may or may not have triggered a bet, at least in a couple of fronts from your perspective. The big one that everybody will talk about was the South Sudan game. US wins by one as 43.5-point favorites. Steve Kerr, as a head coach, has been very critical of his team's lack of focus and intensity in general. With that now being the backdrop, it's been a little bit more rocky than we would have expected for a US team heavily favored to win. What has that done from your perspective, whether that's their first game now against Serbia coming up on Sunday within the group, or some of the specific player props as it relates to US on the futures board?
Yeah, I do have so I actually did when USA was playing Serbia, you know, that line was actually posted for almost like a month, and it was like sitting like 12.5. It had jumped up to 14.5, and Serbia was hanging there in the first half, and I was like, I'm taking this now, 14.5, because it's really reactive. A lot of these spreads are really reactive to like what we're seeing right now, and it moves quite a bit. And then unfortunately for me, Serbia got blasted in the second half and it moved up to 16, but it's back down to like 12.5. I did jump at that 14.5. A big part for me was, you know, they hung around the first half. Bogdan Bogdanovic was not playing. He's a huge piece of that Serbia team. And also Nikola Jovic was out with injury. He's back. He's played their last two exhibition games here. So those are like two NBA guys. I don't think Serbia can beat the United States, but I think they can definitely hang. So at 14.5, I did jump on that. I also did grab two futures. LeBron to lead the team in scoring. I was plus 1,000 when I grabbed it, and him to lead them in assists plus 450 was another one. To me, when I look at the USA roster, just from what you've seen from exhibition, I think Steve Kerr only trusts two guys that are like guaranteed role minutes. I think that's Stephen Curry, LeBron James. I think Joel Embiid's kind of in that mix, but Anthony Davis is like really pressing him for minutes. And then we just don't really know about Kevin Durant. Is he playing? Is he healthy? How many minutes will he play? You know, he had the calf strain a couple of years ago when he played under Steve Kerr, and he came back early and that didn't work out well for him. So I feel like there's a lot happening there. LeBron has moved quite a bit in both those futures markets, but I did grab those.
Down to 5-1. It's cut in half, man.
Yeah, I mean, 10-1 down to 5-1.
I mean, it's a great play. And when we're looking at this team right now, right, it's late in games. They're still going to the old man to make things happen. The ball's in his hands in crunch time. But how difficult is it now handicapping the most talented team who's letting teams hang around and not cover the last couple times out and trying to project whether that's going to continue throughout the tournament? As a capper, how difficult is that bit of data you've seen over the last few games to deal with?
It's hard. The Olympics just in general is pretty difficult just because we don't have, you know, when you do an NBA season, there's so many data points, so much history. Like, you're just slamming together these teams. Like, this USA roster has at this point only played 5 games, and we haven't seen one game where like Steve Kerr's actual rotation is in a meaningful game. So like, it is difficult. I know, like, I think the South Sudan, like that spread was also posted. I remember they had all the USA spreads up, and it got pulled pretty quick there when that game went to a 1-point game, because they're about a 40-point dog for the like group play game as well. Yeah. I'm surprised USA didn't cover as many exhibition games as like Australia got them, Germany got them. You would think like when they're playing all their guys, not their starters, big minutes, and they're only playing like 20, 25 minutes, you think they would be able to separate from those teams, because, you know, a lot of these other teams, Germany, Serbia, Canada, they have really good starting lineups. But as you go into the bench in an exhibition, you would think that's where USA would pull away. So to me, it was kind of a little concerning from a USA standpoint that they weren't able to pull away when there's really no drop off to their roster in an exhibition game.
Yeah, it is a very good point when you look at the way the U.S. has been set up to have a lot of success, even in the games that do not count. $5 favorites here to win the men's basketball tournament at the Olympics. Gets underway in France on Sunday morning as we're talking with John Mettler. Follow him at John Mettler, covers betting analyst. And how I've noticed you've really dove in as far as some of these derivatives here, it's a lot of the country-specific leader props, which are probably very, very fluid as far as the markets. You just mentioned, a bet on LeBron James at 10-1 that's now been cut into half to lead the U.S. in scoring. What are some other ones that jumped out to you amidst a tournament that internationally, especially compared to maybe 8-10 years ago, the amount of talent is really, really spread out now, and you have some fascinating examples of that now within individual countries here.
I'll give two rebounding props. I don't really give too many rebounding props though, but I went, it's kind of like the same vibe for both teams. So I went Josh Giddey to lead Australia in total rebounds. It was plus 190. And to me, like, there's some sports books have Jock Landale as a favorite. Some people have Josh Giddey. It's kind of flipped that price for Giddey. When you look at Landale, I think there's the Australia center is like position is very fluid. So he might, like, Jock Landale might have a game where he plays 30 minutes, but they also have Duop Reith behind him, plays for the Portland Trailblazers. And they have a couple like guys who play, and they're like Australian Pro League, Nick Kay, Will, I don't want to butcher his name, I think it's Minge, but they have a couple guys. Like, I think that's a very fluid situation. So to me, Giddy's the guy. He's not necessarily the best rebounder from like the center position, but he's someone who will have consistent minutes and grabs boards as a guard. So I grabbed Giddey there just because I feel like Landale could get blown up. His minutes could get blown up randomly. Depends on the matchups. And then the other one is I grabbed RJ Barrett plus 400 to lead Canada in total rebounds. Same vibe. They had Kelly Olynyk up there as one of the favorites. He's not even starting. When you look at their FIBA World Cup team from last year, you only had Dwight Powell, Kelly Olynyk. Now you also throw in Trey Lyles, Ken Birch. I don't think Jordy Fernandez is married to anyone. I think it's just who's going to be the most productive of the matchups. But to me, like, Barrett at the four is the same thing as like Giddey. There's like a consistent role there. So that's why I went with Barrett. SGA is the favorite plus 110. To me, that's just a minutes thing. He's on the floor. He's going to be on the floor for the most amount of minutes. So, I mean, he is a good rebounding guard, but if you're giving me, you know, plus 110 SGA, plus 400 Barrett, I'll take Barrett in that one.
Well, speaking of Canada, you are Canadian and your team, your country's laying 7 against Greece. And I believe when you dissected the numbers, you found a prop on the other side in your opponent that you're going to back coming up here over the weekend.
Yeah, I really like this one. So I went Nick Kalathis, the Greek guard, under 8.5 assists. It was minus 102. This is shop around because I saw 6.5, 7.5, and 8.5. So that's a very huge when it comes to the Olympics. These pricing's all over the place just because it is hard to price. Kalathis in the qualifying tournament, he had really big assist game, 10, 11 assists. But that was against like Egypt, Slovenia, teams that don't really have good ball pressure. They don't have rim protection. To me, this is kind of work. That price is working off of that. And Canada has arguably the best point of attack defense you might see ever from a basketball team. I mean, you have Nikhil Alexander-Walker, Dylan Brooks, Lou Dort, Andrew Nembhard, like all these guys. Jordy Fernandez has been picking up full court. I just don't think he's not going to let Nick Kalathis control this offense. I just don't, you know, to get generate assists, you have to create an advantage where the team has to help. I'm not sure he can blow past these Canadian guards. So I just think it's like matchup and also a high number because of what he did in the qualifying tournament.
That's fascinating. That's a great way to look at it too, is the Canada-Greece game that is coming up. That is the primetime game, Saturday night, 3 p.m. Eastern time here as they go to France to start things out. One other player you are high on, at least specifically for a team here, Franz Wagner. What are some angles you're looking at there on the German star?
Yeah, pretty. He's going over 16.5. He's playing Japan. I think you'd just be a little concerned that it could be a blow and his minutes could get decreased. They just played Japan in an exhibition game. Japan has nobody who can guard Franz Wagner. There's no rim protection. He can, you know, they're going to put him on the ball, pick and roll. He's going to get downhill, Euro step through lane. He got 27 points in 20 minutes in the exhibition. There wasn't even motivation in that game to blow them out. In this one, there is, because there's point differential and they want to go for that number one seed. So even if it does kind of get to a big spread, I kind of expect Franz Wagner to keep playing, especially since it's the first game. So they're trying to chase a point differential. 16.5 just feels a little too low for me.
And you can get him to plus 150 to lead the German team in scoring for the entirety of the tournament as well. Second favorite there coming out of Group B behind the tournament host France. Always great to catch up with John Mettler. Follow him at John Mettler. Really, really good insights too on a tournament. I think a lot of us have question marks as to the rosters and the setups. Thanks so much, man, for breaking it down for us.
All right, thanks for having me on. Good luck with your bets, everyone.
Absolutely. We appreciate it. And when we come back, we'll talk a little more NFL training camp. Dustin poses a question that is a very overarching one. We'll discuss it right after this on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now on our new look at VSiN.com, all of our current best bets, plus betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides. You can check out Adam Burke's best bets, the rest of this MLB slates on a Thursday. along with all of our other articles right now at vsin.com. Some of the games underway right now. We've had a few finals so far, but for the most part, Dustin, it's been good pitching matchups across the board here, at least early in games, as we've had two unders, one over, only because of a bullpen meltdown by Baltimore. Orioles end up salvaging a 7-6 win in 10 innings. And we're watching Clayton Kershaw right now, who is early on in some trouble here, just gives up an RBI triple after two clean innings to begin this game, but it is 1-1 San Francisco in business here. And Kershaw's, at the very least, given up a lot of contact so far here. Does have two Ks in two innings. That was the angle I was looking at, under on the Ks today for Kershaw. But a little misplay by Teoscar Hernandez in the corner, and we are tied at one apiece. Logan Webb has given up a couple hits, though. So you're on pace with your over hits.
Getaway day. Day games, yeah. Feels like a recipe for the pitchers to have an edge on a day like today, especially second half of the season. We have some teams that are not going to be postseason bound. They're not officially out of it, but they are officially out of it, if you know what I'm saying.
And some of these teams, too, out of the All-Star break. I mean, the Cubs, for example, 6-game homestand out of the All-Star break. You see this? They score, 9 runs in 6 games combined? All at home, a lot of day games at Wrigley. I mean, that team just looks like anytime you get them with runners in scoring position, they just forget how to hit entirely.
I didn't understand the plan with the offseason. I also didn't understand Cody Bellinger because he bounced back with you. I looked at this team. They still have some weird contracts in there, like Hendricks still on the team. And I didn't understand the plan. I was very low on them coming into the year. However, even after they didn't get off to a great start, I thought they would play better baseball. I didn't know if they were a playoff team, but they're a dumpster fire. They're sellers at the deadline. They need to unload everything they can outside of a few guys to build off of for the next few years. I also want to add some news that has broken here in the last hour. The A's. This affects the American League Rookie of the Year race. The A's are placing closer Mason Miller on the IL, a fracture of the fifth metacarpal, which is just the pinky, in his left hand. That's his non-throwing hand. What happened is Monday night, he was frustrated and he punched a padded training room table in frustration and broke that, or fractured it, whatever you want to word it. He's out for the foreseeable future. Injury on his non-throwing hand, and he is essentially out of the American League Rookie of the Year race, where he was a favorite at one point this season.
And he was, I thought, in legitimate consideration, depending on the trade deadline, a obvious candidate if you thought Emmanuel Clase might fall off a little bit for AL Reliever of the Year. And Miller was 5-6-1, had the by far the most WAR of any reliever in the AL. Granted, didn't have the saves as Clase because of the team he was on, but that really puts a crimp in that thought. Miller has dropped to 20-1 in AL Rookie of the Year. Wyatt Langford of Texas, now your favorite, +165. Tough blow to Miller, who's been awesome all year.
Yeah, Colton Cowser was the leader for a very long time. His number got up to around 6-1, I want to say. It's back down to 225. He's the second shot on the board. I thought about taking a shot on him a couple days ago. I waited. I missed my number because he homered earlier today. Had a big day against the Marlins.
Yeah.
And now at 225, I'm not going to mess around with this market. There's too much volatility. I will say, on vacation, I texted Jared Smith, who was in the first few days of this week filling in. And I said, Colt Keith at 40-1. I like the number. He's like, I don't know. And I kind of agree with him. It was a stretch. He's down to 15-1 now. And now Colt Keith, he has to make up a lot of ground in the average department. And the problem with his stats is they're not going to be sexy. They're just going to be really solid across the board. But I will say, this market, AL Rookie of the Year, it's wide open. If you have a feeling where you have some conviction that you like something, it's worth playing because it's constantly moving here.
The best way to describe the AL Rookie of the Year market is to say Luis Gil, who has had as up and down a season as anybody, is still somehow in the conversation at +275, even though he fell off the map for basically a month stretch for the Yankees, and who knows if he even finishes the year in the rotation yet.
Sure.
Because of the lack of obvious other candidates, Hill is very much live still to win that award, even though his candidacy has really been all over the place here in 2024.
Which is the opposite of the National League Rookie of the Year, where
it is over.
Paul Skeens at -2,000 has all of your momentum.
And then some. You just, if you want to build some bankroll, if you got, thousands to burn.
Yeah, you just throw it on Skeens. Because honestly, even if he shut, I'm not putting this out there as someone who's faded him in that market, but I'm just saying,
you'd win even if it was over, right?
If he was out for the year with Tommy John surgery today, he's still winning the award.
Yes, unequivocally, he would.
He's been that dominant.
He has been.
By the way, Imanaga, 22-1. At one point, you were. I think you might have delay a price on him.
Oh, yeah, you would delay a price. You were a 0.51 ERA at one point, Shota Imanaga. And not a 0.51 wow. ERA since then wow. For Shota. The only issue, though, with laying those big prices is you know, these awards are not announced till November, basically, which is tough for football betting, unfortunately. That's why I'm not a, you know, not a big proponent based on the timing of it. And as we continue to talk some more football today, you have a general one of these state of the life arc questions that sometimes gets brought up to these coaches in their training camp press conferences that really stood out to you. I'll let you take it from here.
Yeah, I have to give Jonathan Gannon a lot of credit. The first time we really saw him speak was this awkward interaction in the Cardinals facility after being traded. The second time we saw him speak was in a teaser clip for the Amazon show, whatever that's called, the season.
He seems like a fascinating guy.
And he was like, do you have fire in your belly? Are you driving down the street? Do you have it in you? And like, you're no emotion. But then we watched this team play. They won four games. I swear to God, in my head, I feel like they won 10. They just played hard football, and I think the narrative and the script on what we think the Arizona Cardinals are going to be is a team going upward. They're going to play good football. They're going to be smart. They're going to be great on defense. And Jonathan Gannon, I'll give him some more credit. Apparently, he wanted to discover, is momentum real?
The answer is perhaps. You know, we actually did a deep dive on momentum this year. Kenny Bell did. Yes and no, if you let it, you know what I mean? But it can also be a negative thing too. So I think that how you frame it in your mind, yeah, you know, but if you're not worried about, you know, January or December, what you did there, and you're worried about day to day improving, probably not much.
Ben, I think it's an interesting conversation because I think, again, similar to something I brought up in the first hour, momentum is something we can't quantify. We cannot tell you, we just say things are going well. We can't tell you why they're going well, like all the time. And I think in betting spaces, I want to say the sharp people don't believe in momentum, right? They do not believe that that's a thing that happens, right? The numbers over the course of time are going to play out how the numbers should. Yet sometimes in sports, and that's, I think that's what makes sports a beautiful thing from a personal, not betting perspective, is that these things we can't explain occur. So I want to give Gannon credit because I think it's interesting. He went on to explain more what they used to research, if indeed momentum is a real thing.
That's looking on historical data from the 1800s of war, then going to Olympics like Paris, so you're talking about, then going to all walks of life, sport. Tennis is a good thing. Golf is a good thing to study, individual sports. Does momentum play? You know, why does Xander go bogey, par, bogey, and then birdie, 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 birdie? Is that momentum? I don't know. Maybe he just hit some good wedge shots, made some putts, but... yeah, so it's something that I'm always interested in. Why we did a deep dive on it, that's a good question. You guys talk about all the time, the momentum of the game shifted on that play or that series or that, and I always thought to myself, is that real? Like, maybe you can feel it, or it's an instinct that you're thinking, oh man, like you're on your heels, or oh man, you're on the attack, you're on the aggressive. Like, what do you got to do to gain momentum, stop momentum, all those things? So we just wanted to make sure we're versed on what that actually is and what that means.
I would have loved to have seen some of the 1800s war examples. You know, they're like charting out plots of what that looked like.
I guess he was looking at the War of 1812, the Civil War. Yeah. Those are the only two I can name, and one only because it has the 1800s in the title.
You remember
the
war of 1812? Very good.
I don't
job.
Even know who was in it. America and France?
I don't know.
War of 1812. Who was in it?
I'm not a history.
War of 1812. Who
Battle
was in
of the
it?
Alamo?
It was United States and Great Britain. Okay. So, but. On the momentum thing, here's how
God bless Jonathan Gannon is what I would say.
Here's how I'll dissect it. One, I love that they're looking into these things, even if he's lying to our face. I love it. It's unconventional. It's outside the box. It's trying to take non-football things and learn from it and apply it to the sport. I really appreciate that as a head coach. What I'd say about momentum is, and he brought up specific plays changing the momentum of the game. I do believe positive events do create more positive events, meaning the confidence is there. Something good has happened. People play looser. You're freer. You're not thinking. You're not on your heels. Therefore, momentum is indeed real. It's just a lot of variables go into it, yes, becoming a tangible thing we see with our eyes.
Because you can't quantify it, it's easy for people naturally in the number space to say, well, it's not a thing. But you actually sit back and watch any football game, Watch any of the playoff games from last year. Watch Packers Niners. Watch Lions Niners and tell me momentum doesn't exist.
And I'd say that the thing that the numbers actually are accounting for is, can this team create momentum consistently?
Jonathan Gannon. How the tables have turned on his perception. Now everybody wants to bet on the Cardinals. The roster's still really, really bad. The roster's terrible, but people love the Cardinals this year. We'll talk some more NFL. Mike Tanier from FTN Fantasy joins us on the other side. A whole lot of deep dives on different NFL situations when we come back.